This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Justin Trudeau recently announced that gender identity and gender expression would be added to the Canadian Human Rights Act. Trudeau also said his government is exploring the use of a gender-neutral option on identity cards. This is good news for trans people whose gender expression and documentation don't match. Kristen Milloy filed a human rights complaint against the Canadian government in 2011. Initially, she wanted to be able to change the gender identity on her birth certificate so it would match her current identity, but now she is calling for an end to any reference to gender on birth certificates at all. Kristen Milloy is a member of the newly formed Gender Free ID Coalition, and she joins me this morning from Ontario. Hello, Kristen.
Good morning, Jane.
Now, a social insurance number doesn't contain any reference to gender. And I know that your complaint is about the social insurance number card. Why is it a problem if the card and the birth certificate don't match?
Despite the fact that your social insurance number card doesn't make reference to gender or sex, they actually do collect and track that information inside their database system. And the concern over social insurance registration has to do with the very vulnerable time of a trans person applying for employment, because the concern is that if someone has gone in, they've interviewed, they've been approved, and they're to be hired for the job, the first step the employer does is they call up the government and they say, I've got this person with this name and this social insurance number, and can you verify that their information is legitimate so we can legally hire them? The person on the other end of that phone call has a computer displayed on it, which identifies the person by a sex and gender designation and also by any previous names that they've had. So it's a very, very dangerous situation if the customer service person happens to say, oh, yes, I have his record right here, but it says Michael, not Michelle. I mean, all of a sudden you don't have the job anymore, and that is a significant issue, considering especially the transgender employment rate is 4 times the national average.
I had no idea that the employer would check with the government and that kind of information might come out.
Well, they're required to check to confirm that you have a it's part of the tax code. They are obviously only allowed to hire people who are legally eligible to work in the country. And they're certainly not supposed to ask about gender, but mistakes do happen. And I've found, especially in researching my case and all of the Access to Information Act requests that I've completed, there is a very dire lack of training that could and would certainly lead to these types of mistakes. In fact, I have collected internal records of their staff referring to me in ways that are grossly inappropriate. So it is most definitely a problem.
And you mentioned that the unemployment rate for trans people is 4 times the national rate?
That's correct. So the vast majority of trans people, there is a fantastic, fantastic study that was done by a group called TransPulse that's available online. And what it reveals is that the vast majority of transgender people live in poverty or are unemployed. Those of us who are employed tend to be very underemployed. I am in a very, very fortunate, extreme minority of trans people who happen to have a good job and financial stability. So that's part of the reason that I've directed my efforts and my resources and time towards projects like the Gender Free ID Coalition, because I feel like, you know, it's a responsibility to fix this for everybody.
Now, the original remedy you were asking for from the Human Rights Commission was to be able to change the gender on your birth certificate, and then you changed to asking for no gender on birth certificates. Why did you do that?
Actually, my first complaint wasn't to the birth certificate people in Ontario, and that wasn't even the first thing I tried to change. It was 2011. I had transitioned 2 or 3 years previously, and I was finally getting around to changing all of the identification documents, which, as I'm sure Well, as you may or may not realize, it's a very cumbersome and expensive process because they all have to be done individually. And the complaint arose because the social insurance registration that I had naively thought would be a very straightforward change, I would just send them an updated form. I received a letter back from them saying, we are refusing to update your gender because it doesn't match the birth certificate you provided. And initially my requested remedy was, you know what, guys, it's unreasonable for you to require a matching birth certificate because not every trans person can provide that for various reasons. Different provinces have different rules. You know, if I was an immigrant from another country, such as China, where the rules are even more complicated, then they'd be going off the citizenship docs, which in some immigrants' cases can never be changed in terms of gender because their country simply doesn't offer it. So I had requested the remedy that they allow transgender people to modify their gender designator on the social insurance record without having to provide supporting documentation like a birth certificate, because the premise was, you guys are a federal ministry of Canada, so you have an obligation under the Canadian Human Rights Act to accommodate transgender people in a way that is legal, regardless of what documents you may be getting from other jurisdictions that to which those rules don't apply. So basically that they can't just pass the buck and say, well, it's Ontario's problem for the birth certificate, or it's China's problem for the original designation on the immigration document. But then things became very interesting and took a very important twist, because their response was not... their defense of the practice of collecting and storing sex and gender from what they call authoritative source documents, the original ID, the birth certificate, and what have you, their defense of it was that they needed it to accurately identify and establish the identity of individuals. So they opened up the door to exploring whether, in fact, that was true. Do you... As a government agency or ministry, can you prove that you have a legitimate justification for needing to have that information? And as we explored further, I conducted an investigation. I filed 14 Access to Information Act requests, and eventually my wonderful lawyer, Barbara Finley, joined me in my quest. And what we determined, in fact, is that there's no defense. They actually don't need to collect or store gender or sex. Their argument that... you know, oh, we need it to distinguish two records that might have the same name, the same birth date, the same birthplace. And if you just unpack that for a second, it's a ridiculous argument, because if you have two records of a person whose name is the same and they were born in the same place, and even to where we've got their parents' names attached to it, that's either a faulty record or probably going to carry the same gender designation anyway, because in most cultures on this planet, there's a strong association between names and genders anyway. So a John Smith and a John Smith are probably both men, right?
Right. A study in Ontario found that half of all transgender people who are living full-time in their affirmed gender have no government identification at all. What does that mean for those people?
So it's true that there are trans people who are what is called stealth when they're passing, and they're believed to be cis by everyone they deal with. They, like any trans person, are going to face the identical bureaucratic boundaries in getting all of their identification updated. It was only as recently as 2012 that the province of Ontario would allow you to change the sex designation on your birth certificate without first proving that you had all of the surgeries, which are often commonly associated with the transgender experience. And as you know, because they derive from the birth certificate, the designation for every other piece of identification, passport and even your health card, they'd be in a very difficult position, because you're talking about a person who's chosen not to identify as trans, and they're just trying to live their life, and maybe they're in a small town or they have some reason why it's dangerous for them to be outed as trans. And you're literally forcing them to out themselves as trans every time they get pulled over for a traffic stop or even buy alcohol or cigarettes. It's a very dangerous situation.
And I guess for some people, the binary mode of changing from male to female on a birth certificate doesn't work for everybody.
That's correct. So that's why we've revised our goals. It used to be that everybody's primary focus was more or less on making it easier to change from male to female or vice versa on your documentation. But in this generation of people, we're finding that you know, people are expressing and experiencing their gender in so many different ways, that there's a growing segment of the population for whom a designation of either male or female would not be appropriate. And it opens up a can of worms, because while some countries will allow such people, they're called non-binary people because they're outside of the binary male and female, they can get an X put on their ID instead of an M or an F. But that's no good, because all it does is serve as a flag to identify you for discrimination and potentially violence if you travel to a dangerous place, particularly with passports. My colleague, Rory Vandrish, who is another member of the coalition, their case is to do with passports. So whereas mine is social insurance, they went after the passports. And that's precisely the point that they've raised, in that the solution of having an MF or an X available is really no solution at all because of those problems that it raises.
Yeah, I can't imagine going through a passport control with something that stands out as saying that you are not of a non-binary gender, like an X on your passport.
Precisely. I mean, or going through looking like a woman and having a passport that says male too. I mean, the bottom line is that it's actually the designation itself, regardless what it says, that's dangerous and that causes problems. So, I know. Whereas in my case, we are asking social insurance to completely stop collecting, storing, and repeating gender or sex designation. Rory's asking the same thing of the passports. We in the coalition would like to see Canada become the first country in the world to universally issue 100% of passports with the X designation for unspecified, because it doesn't actually mean you're a third gender or you're non-binary. The X in the database of the passports, it just means that no information is available. And it's actually a value that's supported in the International Civil Aviation Authorities Association. There's an international passport treaty to which all the countries have signed, and that's the reason that you can take a passport and scan it anywhere in the world. Now, currently that treaty requires that there be a spot for gender, but it doesn't require that there be a presence of a male or female designator. It actually allows for there to be an X. It would be perfectly legal, internationally speaking, for Canada to do this. And Rory has a saying that I think is rather genius. Rory says that gender belongs on the census, not on the passport.
I saw that on your website this morning, and I just loved that. And I actually wrote it down here. I was going to ask you about that, because I guess the idea is that if you choose to self-identify, that's totally fine, but the passport cannot just take over and identify yourself for you in a way that may indeed be erroneous.
Oh, that's 100% correct. So the really infuriating thing about this whole bureaucratic government approach is that I mentioned earlier that they refer to birth certificates and the like as an authoritative source document. They say we have to be able to trace the documentation, the paper trail, to identify your sex and gender correctly. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Jane, and I'm sure the same must be true for you, the only authoritative source for determining my gender is myself. My gender comes from me. So if anyone wants to get to the bottom of how someone identifies, it shouldn't be through a piece of paper from however many decades ago. It should certainly be from the person themselves, or omit it entirely, really, because it's not really a vital piece of information, much the same as race was on driver's licenses.
It's one of those things that I think, you know, it will take people a little bit of time to get their heads around, because of course we're so used to somebody has a baby, they're like, is it a boy or a girl? But when you start thinking about it deeply, then there is absolutely no need to have that marked in that official way that then follows you for the rest of your life.
As a person who's suffered quite a lot of stress and bureaucracy over it, I, as a person, I've seen others have their lives destroyed over it. I would agree with you 100%. It's very strange to come into the office and somebody's got cute little blue cookies and balloons. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, so you had a baby with a penis. Why do I have to know that, honestly? And you're not going to know the kid's gender. The kid's gender is, you know, the kid's gender identity is I'm hungry, and the kid's gender expression is pooping his pants. It takes a few years, and these poor kids who are not, you know, going to be inclined to live and behave within the expected gender norm that we push on people, they're gonna have their lives much more difficult. And I think that's why you have the phenomenon of trans people pushing back against this, because it's possible for every single family and every single child to have a very happy, loving life without having to be forced or expected to live a certain way or wear certain things, you know?
It's been really good to talk to you this morning, Kristen. I'm going to refer people to the website because there's all kinds of good resources there for people to check into. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, Jane.
Kristen Milloy is a member of the newly formed Gender Free ID Coalition, and she joined me this morning from Ontario. You can find out more information from the coalition's website, including how to make a request for gender free documentation. And the URL is genderfreeidcoalition.ca, and it's gender-freeidcoalition.ca.